Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
At 1:30, I was at the third floor with my family at the surgical building. We heard lots of quadcopters over our heads at the hospital. They were asking us by microphone actually to evacuate the hospital immediately. And after like 5-10 minutes, I heard a very big explosion.
Nasser, one of the largest hospitals in southern Gaza, is no longer functional after a week-long siege and a weekend raid by the Israeli military, which cut off electricity and oxygen supplies. Up to 100 people were arrested. A number of patients in the hospital have died. We'll speak with a doctor who recently worked at Nasser Hospital. Then to Russia, where more than 400 people have been detained for publicly mourning the death of Alexei Navalny, who died in an Arctic prison Friday.
I want Putin and all of his entourage, Putin's friends and his government to know that they will be held accountable for what they have done to our country, to my family and to my husband, and that day will come very soon.
We'll speak with Russian-American journalist Masha Gessen, staff writer at The New Yorker, about the death of Alexei Navalny, Putin's most formidable opponent. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. More than 400 people have been detained in Russia for publicly mourning the death of Alexei Navalny, who reportedly died in an Arctic prison Friday at the age of 47. Navalny was Russia's most prominent critic of President Vladimir Putin. He was serving a 19-year sentence at the time of his death, which President Biden and a number of other Western leaders directly blamed on Putin. Navalny's mother, who traveled to the Arctic town of Kharp, was denied access to her son's body and was told by prison authorities Navalny died of sudden death syndrome. Carrie Amish, a spokesperson for Navalny, spoke on Saturday.
He was a symbol of hope and a symbol of courage for many Russian people. Now they feel like this idea of hope abandoned them. That's not true. And I'm sure that people will find strength to continue their fight, because this is what Alexei always wanted, and this is what he was telling everyone all the time, even from the prison.
Amnesty International Secretary General Agnès Callamard called for an international probe into Navalny's death.
Look, the international community need to react with the strongest way possible, but we know that actions have very little impact right now on Putin and on Russia. But still, silence is not an option. We must stand up, and the international political leaders around the world must make as strong a statement as possible. They must demand investigations. They must, in fact, investigate his unlawful death themselves. We must call on the United Nations to investigate that death, that unlawful death, that killing, in fact.
We'll speak to Russian-American journalist Masha Gessen. Her latest piece, The Death of Alexei Navalny, Putin's Most Formidable Opponent, later in the program. Israel's unrelenting assault on the Gaza Strip has killed over 29,000 Palestinians and injured another 69,000 since October 7th. Nasser Hospital in southern Gaza has been declared no longer functional by the World Health Organization amidst a days-long Israeli raid on the facility. The WHO says some 200 patients remain in the hospital, but that its aid workers were barred from accessing them. At least 8 people at the hospital have died since Israeli soldiers cut off electricity and oxygen supplies last week. On Sunday, dozens of people were killed and injured after Israeli forces started firing at crowds attempting to access life-sustaining aid from UN trucks in Gaza City. Israeli War Cabinet member Benny Gantz has warned that the Israeli military will launch its ground offensive in Rafah unless Hamas frees all hostages by March 10th, the start of the holy month of Ramadan. Some 1.5 million displaced Palestinians are now sheltering in Rafah. This is Rashid Abu Eida, who was forced to flee from Jabalia.
We are fleeing to safety, the safety of our children, our women, and ourselves. And today we have reached the closest point to the border. I am around 50 meters away from the border with Egypt. After here, where can I go? 50 meters away from Egypt's border, and they said Rafah was the safest place. We came to Rafah, and now the Israelis want to enter Rafah. Where should we go?
The group Sinai for Human Rights has released video which appears to show the construction of a large area enclosed by concrete walls on the Egyptian side of the border with Gaza. The group says the construction is, quote, in preparation for the reception of Palestinian refugees in the case of mass exodus, unquote. At The Hague, the International Court of Justice has begun historic hearings on Israel's occupation of Palestinian territories. Palestinian Foreign Minister Riyad al-Maliki addressed the World Court earlier today.
Ending Israel's impunity is a moral, political, and legal imperative. Successive Israeli governments have given the Palestinian people only 3 options. Displacement, subjugation, or death. These are the choices: ethnic cleansing, apartheid, or genocide. Mr. President, members of the court, the State of Palestine reaffirms its unwavering commitment to the rule of international law, which must finally prevail.
The World Court will hear arguments from at least 52 nations through next Monday. The hearings are in response to a 2022 request from the UN General Assembly. In related news, the International Court of Justice Friday rejected a request by South Africa to impose emergency measures against Israel's planned ground offensive in Rafah. The court said no new action was needed as it demanded Israel comply with its January order to take all measures within its power to prevent genocide in Gaza. The court warned Israel's intensifying attacks, quote, would exponentially increase what is already a humanitarian nightmare with untold regional consequences, unquote. Solidarity protests with Gaza took place around the world again this weekend, including in London, where tens of thousands of people streamed through the city streets. In India, workers with the Water Transport Workers Federation vowed not to load or unload weapons to Israel, saying they, quote, always stand against the war and killing of innocent people, unquote. In the U.S., the African Methodist Episcopal Church Bishops Council called on the Biden administration to end funding for what it calls Israel's, quote, mass genocide, unquote. In Michigan, Rashida Tlaib, the only Palestinian-American member of Congress, is urging Democrats to vote uncommitted in next Tuesday's presidential primary to protest President Biden's complicity in Israel's assault on Gaza. Here in New York, high school students across the city walked out of class Friday for their second mass coordinated action against the war on Gaza. Students are continuing to organize despite what they say are attempts by school administrators to intimidate and censor them.
Our students recognize that we have a direct responsibility to act from right here, where our institution's complicity with Zionism has been made loud and clear. We recognize our responsibility to the people of Gaza and stand in unwavering solidarity with them.
In Israel, thousands took to the streets of Tel Aviv Saturday night to demand an immediate election to replace Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his government. Outside of Tel Aviv's military headquarters, another major protest called on Netanyahu to prioritize the release of the remaining hostages in Gaza.
We have no time anymore. My brother lost his wife, was murdered in this horrible attack on October 7th. He has a son, a two-year-old son, who is waiting for him at home. He's now his father and his mother, and we need him back. I call for the Israeli government, for any government in the world, to do something, because we cannot wait anymore.
On Sunday, Israel's far-right cabinet passed a declaration opposing the, quote, unilateral recognition, unquote, of Palestinian statehood, saying any agreement on statehood must come through direct negotiations. Israel's declared Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva persona non grata after he accused Israel of genocide in Gaza and likened its actions to the Nazi Holocaust. Lula made the remarks as he spoke at the African Union Summit in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
What is happening in the Gaza Strip with the Palestinian people has no parallel in other historical moments. In fact, it did exist when Hitler decided to kill the Jews.
At the African Union summit, African leaders discussed ongoing conflicts in the region and the spiraling humanitarian situations in Sudan and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Yemen's Houthi movement claimed a Sunday attack on the British-registered cargo ship Rubimar in the Gulf of Aden, which forced crews to abandon ship. The stricken vessel is now reportedly at risk of sinking. This comes after U.S. forces launched more retaliatory attacks on Houthi-controlled areas in Yemen over the weekend. U.S. Central Command confirmed Sunday at least five Houthi targets were struck, including an unmanned underwater vessel in the Red Sea and several missiles, which military officials claim presented, quote, an imminent threat to U.S. Navy ships and merchant vessels in the region, unquote. The New York Times reports Israel was behind recent attacks inside Iran targeting two critical natural gas pipelines. The acts of sabotage knocked out natural gas supplies for homes and businesses in parts of five provinces. Israel has long carried out a shadow war on Iran that has involved assassinating Iranian nuclear scientists and waging cyber attacks on government agencies. In news from Ukraine, Russian forces have seized full control of the city of Avdiivka in Donetsk. Some military experts have described the fall of Avdiivka as Russia's biggest victory in 9 months since Russian troops captured Bakhmut. The Biden administration blamed the fall of the city on congressional inaction, as U.S. lawmakers have yet to approve a request for $60 billion in new military aid. A New York Supreme Court justice has ordered Donald Trump to pay nearly $355 million in penalties, plus almost $100 million in interest for illegally inflating the value of his assets in order to secure more favorable loans and insurance for his New York real estate empire. Trump is also barred from running any business in New York for 3 years. Trump's two eldest sons face a 2-year ban and were each ordered to pay $4 million. Judge Arthur Engoron also said Judge Barbara Jones will continue to act as independent monitor of Trump's businesses and ordered an additional independent director of compliance at the Trump Organization. In his ruling, Judge Engoron criticized Trump and his son, saying, quote, their complete lack of contrition and remorse borders on pathological, unquote. The ruling came in a case brought by New York Attorney General Letitia James, who spoke to reporters after the ruling.
Donald Trump may have authored the art of the deal, but he perfected the art of the steal. This long-running fraud was intentional, egregious, illegal. And he did it all of this. He did all of this with the help of the other defendants, his two adult sons and senior executives at the Trump Organization.
Donald Trump plans to appeal the ruling, which he described as a complete and total sham. In other Trump news, the former president has reportedly expressed support in private for a federal 16-week abortion ban, with exceptions for rape or incest if the pregnant person is at risk of death also. And in Texas, Republican Governor Greg Abbott has announced plans to build an 80-acre military base housing up to 2,300 soldiers in the city of Eagle Pass along the border with Mexico as his administration enforces a brutal immigration crackdown. Governor Abbott has continued to defy federal authorities in the region. He spoke Friday.
To expand our border security capabilities, we are building a new Texas Military Department base camp that allows the Texas National Guard to increase and to improve operations in this area.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, one of the largest hospitals in southern Gaza is no longer functional. After a week-long siege and raid by the Israeli military, which cut off electricity and oxygen supplies. At least 8 patients have died. Up to 100 people were arrested. We'll speak with a doctor who recently worked there. Stay with us.
يا ريت اقدر اعيد الزنزير الماسكني يا ريت بنفع احكي كل شي انا مخبي بصوت عالي بكل تعبير وكل العالم يسمعني يا ريت بنفع اعطي كل الحب اللي جوا وقيم كل الحيطان اللي بتخنقني وبتفرقنا يا ريت افرجيك شو يعني تكون انا لما تسوق بتوافقني كل عصفور
Bashar Murad's Arabic rendition of Nina Simone's I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free for the soundtrack of the film A Gaza Weekend. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's unrelenting assault on the Gaza Strip has killed over 29,000 Palestinians and injured another 69,000 since October 7th. We begin today's show in the southern Gaza city of Khan Yunis, where the Gaza Health Ministry is reporting one of Gaza's largest hospitals, Al-Nasser Hospital, is no longer functional amidst a days-long Israeli raid on the facility over the weekend. At least 8 people at the hospital have reportedly died since Israeli soldiers cut off electricity and oxygen supplies. The head of the World Health Organization, Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, posted on X Sunday, quote, Nasser Hospital in Gaza is not functional anymore after a week-long siege followed by the ongoing raid. Both yesterday and the day before, the WHO team was not permitted to enter the hospital to assess the conditions of the patients and critical medical needs, despite reaching the hospital compound to deliver fuel alongside partners. There are still about 200 patients in the hospital. At least 20 need to be urgently referred to other hospitals to receive health care. Medical referral is every patient's right. The cost of delays will be paid by patients' lives. Access to the patients and hospitals should be facilitated, end quote. The World Health Organization says it's still trying to evacuate the remaining patients in the hospital in Khan Yunis to other facilities. On Friday, the Gaza Health Ministry said an aid convoy led by the United Nations was detained for 7 hours and prevented from reaching the hospital. The ministry said Saturday Israeli forces, quote, arrested a large number of the directors and staff of the hospital while they were tending to the wounded. Up to 100 people were reportedly arrested. On Sunday, Dr. Ahmed Mograbi at Nasser Hospital sent Democracy Now! A video describing what happened when the hospital was stormed by Israeli troops.
At 1:30, I was at the third floor with my family at the surgical building. We heard lots of quadcopters over our heads at the hospital. They were asking us by microphone actually to evacuate the hospital immediately. And after like 15 minutes, I heard a very big explosion. Actually, they bombed and chilling the third floor where I'm staying. Exactly, they targeted the orthopedic department, and I took my phone. I recorded some couple of videos, and I posted on my Instagram how did people as a result of this explosion. It was like chaos. Everybody running there and there. So I realized that it is invasion of IDF. As I started hearing some dogs at the hospital yards, and actually, yeah, they destroyed the back wall of the hospital and released their dogs. I changed my scrub immediately, and I took this my clothes. Actually, I bought this my clothes, and I ran away from the hospital with my family, with many of patients, many of people, some of my medical staff there. And can you guess it was like 2 a.m. early morning. It was cold, and there was a checkpoint away from the main gate of the hospital, about like 50 meters only. There was tanks, soldiers, dogs, and this started checking everybody there, everybody. So it's not allowed to cross the checkpoint without checking you. So when my turn comes, they asked me to go forward or to come to the checkpoint. Me and other four people. Actually, I told my wife, my children, that I might be arrested. So don't worry. Maybe it will take 2 weeks, 1 month. So I'll be fine. Blah blah blah. And they asked us to look at the camera, big camera on front, for 30 minutes. It's not one camera, it's lots of cameras that are there. You have to look forward for 30 minutes, half minute. During this time, actually, they told us actually to move and leave my nurse. My nurse was standing next to me or beside me. And they took my nurse. They asked him to take off all his clothes at this cold. And they took him inside. And they ordered me and others actually to go and to keep moving. Just keep moving. And I walked with my family about 10 kilometers that night. 10 kilometers. Nothing remained in Khan Yunis. Nothing. It's like horror movies. No streets, no buildings are there. Only dead bodies all over around. Only dead bodies. By the way, I was hearing my friend Rami was screaming. They were beating him. Not only him, many, many. Many, they took many. I managed to get Rafah early morning, and I spent that day at the street. Who remained of medical staff, actually, all of them are arrested. They arrested all the medical team who remained at Nasser Hospital. We don't know the fate of my colleagues. Actually, from my department, they took one GP doctor, my assistant, Dr. Mahmoud. They took two nurses from my department, Rami and Muhammad. They took, I think, around 100 of medical staff already have been arrested by IDF. Now I'm at Rafah. I came here to IGH Hospital in Rafah to say hello to my friends, actually. And this is the situation here. I built a tent, by the way, for my family. I went to the MSF shelter with my wife and my children. I'll keep you updated. Thank you.
That was Dr. Ahmed Moghrabi speaking Sunday from Rafah. He was forced to leave Al Nasser Hospital. with the Israeli raid. He was the head of plastic surgery there. Last week, Democracy Now! Was able to receive updates from one of the last remaining surgeons inside Al-Nasser Hospital, Dr. Khaled Asser. This is the last video Dr. Asser posted on his Instagram page from Friday evening.
This ICU patient have just died because they cut all the electricity at Nasser Medical Hospital. And another six patients is awaiting the same fate.
We are looking at a dead patient during the days-long Israeli raid on Al-Nasser Hospital this weekend. People were unable to reach Dr. Khaled Asser, raising concerns he had possibly been abducted. This morning, Democracy Now! Was able to reach Dr. Khaled Asser's cousin, Dr. Usaid Asser. He's a Palestinian refugee from Gaza and a surgeon resident in training in Lubbock, Texas. We asked him if he's heard anything from his cousin at Al-Nasser. This is what he shared with us.
Hi, this is Dr. Asser. This is just an update about Dr. Khaled Asser, who's my cousin. Yesterday he texted in our group chat, where we have a telemedicine group to discuss trauma cases, and he reported that he is relatively okay, and he was not abducted, which is amazing. But it sounds like some of his colleagues were abducted, and some of the patients as well. But he is still in Nasser Hospital, taking care of the remaining patients in the orthopedic and burn units.
That is Dr. Usaid Asser, cousin of Dr. Khaled Asser, still in Gaza. For more, we're joined in Chicago by Dr. Thara Ahmoud, an emergency room physician who spent 3 weeks in Gaza volunteering at Al-Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis. He's a board member for MedGlobal, which has an office in Gaza and is working with the World Health Organization. Dr. Ahmed just returned to Chicago, where he's the global health director of his hospital and also an assistant professor of emergency medicine at the University of Illinois, Chicago. Thanks for joining us again, Dr. Ahmoud. If you can give us the latest on what took place, the hospital where you volunteered, Al-Nasser Hospital, one of the largest in southern Gaza, the World Health Organization has called it now non-functional. The Israeli raid took place this weekend. Explain what you understand is taking place.
Well, this all really started just about a month ago while I was there in Khan Yunis at Nasser Hospital. The Israeli tanks and the military was inching closer and closer to the hospital and had made its way around the complex of the hospital. And many of the staff then had told me that this was going to unfold. What we're seeing happening now over the course of a week, they had predicted this is exactly what would happen. And they knew that because many of them had been displaced from other hospitals throughout the Gaza Strip. Many of them had come from Al-Aqsa Hospital in Deir el-Balah. Many of them had come from Shifa Hospital in Gaza City. And so they had predicted that what would happen is people would be forced to be displaced from around the compound where thousands of people were sheltering, that there would be very intense bombing and shelling. There would be demands for them to leave. There would be threats, just like we saw happened all of last week. And then finally, there would be an assault on the hospital, a raid with troops, and many people would be abducted. And they even said what would happen during the abduction. They said Israeli troops would clear the hospital floor by floor, and whoever they felt like detaining and abducting, they would take them, and they would be gone anywhere from 2 weeks to 4 weeks, and they'd be subjected to humiliation and torture. And they predicted that many people would unnecessarily die. And that's exactly what we heard. I was also able to get an update from Dr. Khaled, the trauma surgeon that you just mentioned. And one of the things that he said in that message was that it was 3 days of hell for patients and for doctors and for staff. He had mentioned that they were essentially asking many of the staff and the patients to keep moving from building to building within the medical complex. He mentioned that, you know, they had to move 65 patients that were bedbound using one elevator to the smallest and oldest building in the compound. And it was him and 20 of the medical staff members that remained while there were 200 patients. And the other thing is, yes, electricity was cut off and ICU patients died, but I just kind of want to give the details of how that happens. When you cut off electricity, especially for ICU patients, many of whom are dependent on ventilators to breathe, once you cut off that electricity, they suffocate to death and they die.